Hi, James. How are we doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. We were just talking about the fact that it appears that the Chinese economy is slowing down, the Indian economy is slowing down, the European economy is slowing down, and certainly the American economy and even the Brazilian economy is slowing down. Is that really true? And is this just a very temporary thing, or is this a major trend of contracting economies all throughout the world? Are we moving into some sort of a recession?
Well, unfortunately, it is true, and it exactly as you indicate, this seems to be a fairly global phenomenon. There's no bright spot in the global economy right now, whereas in years past, people have looked to places like China to be leading that economic charge, even at times when the rest of the world was pulling back. China is no longer really fulfilling that role, and of course, the latest revised estimates of their GDP growth is down to 7.5%. But again, those numbers are basically pulled out of a hat for anyone who knows how the Chinese arrive at their GDP estimates. Basically, it's a man-made number, and that's not myself saying that. That's actually Li Keqiang, who is currently the premier of China, who back in 2007 said this in leaked diplomatic documents that were leaked by WikiLeaks. He actually said the GDP is a man-made number, it's unreliable, and he personally doesn't use it to understand where China's economy is. So anyways, that 7.5% number is fairly meaningless, other than to show that the GDP estimates for China's growth over the coming quarter and the coming year are considerably lower than what analysts were expecting at the beginning of the year. So we definitely do see a slowdown happening across the board, basically. It's happening in China, it's happening in India, in Brazil. In fact, in India, they're coming up against an economic crisis that I just wrote about in my most recent International Forecaster editorial. And all of this is of a piece because all of it is related to the Federal Reserve and the so-called taper that's going to happen next month or might be happening next month as capital basically flows out of the developing economies and back into the United States in a type of risk-on trade. And we're going to see how that unfolds, but unfortunately it's having some devastating effects on some developing economies around the world as we speak.
Well, now, basically, if the United States, if the Federal Reserve stops putting $85 billion a month into the economy, what's going to happen? What impact is that going to have throughout the world? And hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with James Corbett. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. My guest this afternoon is James Corbett, who writes regularly for the International Forecaster, and we're simply talking about the fact that the world economy is turning down. So the Chinese economy is turning down. The Indian economy is contracting. The economy in Brazil, the economy in Europe, and yes, the economy in the United States is contracting. And basically, of course, the question is, what is the Federal Reserve going to do? The only thing that's maintaining the American economy is the fact that the Federal Reserve is pumping $85 billion a month, almost $1 trillion a year into the economy, and they're simply pumping that in, trying to keep the economy going. But, of course, as people look and see what's happening, many of them believe, of course, as the Federal Reserve has intimated, that they're going to sometime going to have to start cutting back on the availability of these funds because you can't keep doing this indefinitely unless you want to destroy our economy. I think the Federal Reserve has well over $3.2 or $3.4 trillion that they've created that they've pumped into the economy to keep our economy and the economy of the rest of the world going. In fact, how much do we have any idea, James, how much they put into the European Central Bank and other central banks to try to keep the whole world economy from collapsing? Do we have any thought how much that is?
Well, unfortunately, the Federal Reserve has kept it close to their chest in terms of how much they've actually been pumping into foreign banks to keep those afloat. That number, as far as I know, has never been definitively released, but it's something that congressmen have been questioning Ben Bernanke about for years now. And basically, they've been very evasive about that. And we know that they have been taking some of this bailout money that was supposed to bail out the American economy and helping to bail out Europe. But we don't know, or at least I don't know if it's ever been released exactly how much money that is, but to the tune of billions of dollars, certainly. So we do know that some of that money is making its way there. And this, again, is part of this global economy, everything is of one piece, which is the new normal for the economy that's been created around us, in which what happens in the U.S. affects things around markets around the world, what happens in Europe affects things in the U.S. It's all of this global interconnected woven tapestry that has been very, very consciously created to be so, because this is, of course, the forerunner for that global market, the global government institutions, the global economy, the global one world currency, and of course the global religion and all of that that's being worked on behind the scenes as well. So
hold that thought, hold the thought, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Cindy James is just talking about how the Fed has actually been, Federal Reserve System, has been funneling money to other countries, trying to keep this whole world economy going. Nobody knows, because the Fed will not tell us how much they put out to other countries throughout the world, but Greece is certainly having a terrible time, like 27% general unemployment. For young people, they're talking 65% unemployment for young people just out of college. Basically, Greece is a basket case. They're going to need another loan. So many of the countries in Southern Europe are having very, very real problems. The economy there is contracting. And the Fed now certainly is saying, well, since the economy is getting better, pretty soon we're going to be able to actually cut back. But the economy is not getting better. They're simply lying. Figures don't lie, but liars figure. And if you look at the real unemployment figures, not the U2 figures they use, but what do you think the real unemployment figures are if we were to use the U6 unemployment, a Bureau of Labor Statistics figures? What are we really talking about?
I haven't looked recently, but ShadowStats.com, John Williams' site, is indicating somewhere around the 6% mark. I'm sorry, that's the inflation rate. I'm sorry, I'm just looking at this right now. I haven't looked at his unemployment figures for a while now, so I'm not sure what we're running at, but it's obviously going to be over the 7% or whatever they're telling us in the official figures. The last time I looked, it was somewhere more around 20%.
I think it's probably still out there. And basically, they keep telling us all about these wonderful new jobs. Look at all the new jobs. But they never tell us most of these are just part-time, low-paying jobs, aren't they?
Of course, absolutely. In fact, this is something that's becoming something of a scandal in the UK at the moment, is this so-called zero-hour contracts, which a lot of companies employ, which basically means that people are quote-unquote employed, but they don't have a set number of hours that they're working each week. Basically, they find out on a day-to-day or week-to-week basis if and when and how long they'll be working in the coming days. And this is, unfortunately, the sort of new normal for the economy in the UK, certainly, and in many places around the world increasingly, as any semblance of job stability is jettisoned. And unfortunately, this is the type of economy that I think they're ultimately hoping to bring the rest of the world online with. And we see that even in markets like in Japan, where traditionally people have had lifelong employment with one company, and it's been that type of career path. That, of course, is slowly changing here as well, as there's more and more clamor for reforms of the Japanese business system to make it easier for companies to fire their workers, etc., so that there can be more labor flexibility and all of this type of rhetoric. And we're starting to see this not only coming through the usual channels, but now being hardwired into law through such things as the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. Just looking at the ShadowStats.com website, it's now about 23% he has the unemployment rate at. So
that is the U6 unemployment. That is the unemployed, the underemployed, and those have just given up looking for work.
Well, the official U6 is just under 15%, but John Williams is running at about 23%. So definitely.
All right, well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And here it's really so interesting. You've listened to the news and basically listen to the radio, and they tell you what's happening to the stock market, what's happening, that's certainly to oil. But they haven't mentioned that gold is almost up $100 an ounce over the last 3 or 4 weeks, that silver's up at almost $4 an ounce over the last 4 weeks. I wonder why they tell us certain things, but they never mention other things.
That's a very good point. Of course, it's all about distraction. It's all about what they can keep people's eye on. But I think the important thing that's happening this week that we should definitely mention is the lead up to war with Syria, at least some sort of military intervention in Syria, which I think is having a profound effect on the markets today, especially following John Kerry's speech, which he just made, basically trying to make the case for a war with Syria in a very eerily similar manner to the one in which Colin Powell tried to make the case for war with Iraq at the UN back in early 2003. I think we're seeing a similar type of rhetoric, similar speech happening now, trying to convince us that Bashar al-Assad was insane enough to wait for UN chemical weapons inspectors to arrive in his country before committing a chemical weapons attack, which was militarily completely useless and counterproductive, basically, since they've been winning the ground war against the terrorists, the foreign-backed terrorist forces, for quite a while now. But at any rate, that has had an effect on the markets already. We've seen the Dow plummeting below the 15,000 mark after Kerry started making his speech. We saw gold rising after having taken a bit of a dip under the $1,400 mark. We saw gold rising back towards that $1,400 mark. We saw the U.S. Dollar starting to lose ground against the Japanese yen and other foreign currencies. And we saw 10-year treasury yields, which we were talking about last week, starting to go back down as basically people are planning in more risk. So they're going back to traditional safe haven assets, including, of course, 10-year treasuries, because that's traditionally where money goes when there's some sort of disturbance in the markets. So we're seeing this starting to have an effect right now, and we'll probably continue to see this over the course of the next week, assuming that the military intervention itself doesn't actually start before then.
Well, I'm really frightened by this military intervention. I remember that speech given by Colin Powell where he talked about Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction and how Saddam Hussein was plotting against America. That's why we had to invade Iraq. It was all a lie. He was lying. And he has admitted, you can go up on the internet and find that Colin Powell would admit the speech was a lie and that he'd been lied to. But he did it. He got up and he lied to the American people so he could go in and kill thousands of Americans. We lost probably close to 6,000 American soldiers there. We succeeded in killing well over 100,000. Some people say as many as a million Iraqis. We don't know. But does anybody really care? Does anyone really care how many people we killed unnecessarily because Colin Powell lied to us, just like John Kerry, member of the Trilateral Commission and Council on Foreign Relations, is lying to the American people today? Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Our guest is James Corbett, and we have Jay calling from Soquel. Hi, Jay. How are we doing?
I'm fine, sir. I'd like to say that, first of all, this whole of the economy, I wash windows here in Santa Cruz, and I work for myself. I do like gardening, and I wash windows. And I don't, you know, if as long as people have if windows to wash, I'm gonna have work. You know, I've had a customer for 10, 15 years. So I'm just saying, like, if there's work out there, like you gotta find something what to do. The whole thing is you gotta find something that somebody wants to buy. I'm also trying to write a book right now. And so after I finish that, the people write my, you know, to buy my book. And I only got to write it one time, see? You know? So it's just like that. And I was like, this whole thing about Syria is like a total joke. Or because the CIA or whoever, the gays, Saddam, all the weapons from Iraq, right? So it was for the government, gays. You know, the weapons to the first, I believe.
Yeah, well, I think the point she is making is the fact that Assad got his chemical weapons from Saddam Hussein, and Saddam Hussein got his chemical weapons from the United States and the CIA, and we gave it to them so we could kill all the Kurds and kill a lot of Iranians, which he did. Anything else you want to say, Jay, before we let you go?
I believe that the CIA, gave it to Saddam Hussein, and then they gave it to Assad.
Right.
The same people gave us the same didn't give the weapons to Syria. Our government gave them the same spot, the same use of them. And they're going to take the weapons out of there, give them to somebody else. It's the same thing, brother. Same thing.
I share your concern. God bless and thanks for calling, Jay. Again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-DIVINITY, 1-888-24-DIVINITY or 464-8295. And do you have any comment at all on what Jay was saying?
Well, the real elephant in the room when it comes to Syria's chemical weapons problem is the issue of the terrorists, the foreign-backed terrorist insurgency in the country, and where they got their chemical weapons, because they do have chemical weapons. In fact, they've put out videos over the past several months showing them using some of these chemical weapons on rabbits and the like, and saying, "You will be next, you infidels," talking about the Syrian regime. So we know that they have chemical weapons. They've had chemical weapons training that has been provided to them by the U.S., ostensibly under the cover of defense against chemical weapons, but of course defense training is the exact same as offensive training, basically. And we know that there's been a long build-up to this. So the question is, where and when did the Syrian rebel forces get their hands on chemical weapons? And the answer is most likely that they secured them from Libya after the fall of Gaddafi. And this is related to the CIA operations that were taking place in Benghazi in September of 2012, back when the consulate there was raided. And that's why the CIA is scrambling and trying to do everything they can to cover up their role on the ground during the September 11th raid on the consulate, as reported by no less than that well-known conspiracy outlet, CNN. So this is all coming together, and it's all of a piece. Basically, the CIA was helping to ship weapons out of Libya into Syria. Now, we know that the terrorists there have their hands on chemical weapons and have threatened to use them in the past. There have also been indications that that the U.S. was actively conspiring with them to set up a type of false flag chemical weapons use attack. And lo and behold, one happens, and what is the inevitable result? We are heading towards military intervention, exactly as the terrorist forces wanted in Syria all along. So I think it's quite obvious that this is not what it seems. It's not an attack from Assad, but we're being told it is, with very, very little evidence, and the shades of what happened in Iraq 10 years ago are just undeniable, I think.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, my fear is that basically men and women become accomplices to the evil that they fail to oppose. If we aren't opposing this move towards a war with Syria, then the justification is we've got to go in there and kill a lot of people because they're using chemical weapons and killing people. If you can understand the logic of that, you're certainly smarter than I am. But we must understand that certainly everything we do will have consequences. And I really fear that America is extremely vulnerable to terrorist attacks. We don't have any terrorist attacks. We control most of the terrorists, but Syria or Iran or some of those countries over there could very well decide to take action against America with disastrous consequences for everybody listening to the program. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, James, what's happening to the economy here at home? Suddenly we hear that the production of cars is up, and suddenly that's optimistic. But then we hear suddenly the Walmart sales and Target sales and some of our big outlets are down. So what's really going on with the American economy from your point of view?
Well, this past week saw a durable goods orders report, which is a report on orders for long-lasting U.S. manufactured goods, goods that are meant to last over 3 years. That includes everything from toasters to airplanes and everything in between. So it's quite a broad-ranging report and something that's used as a report card, basically, on the health of the U.S. economy. And it came through with some pretty disappointing numbers, definitely coming in under expectations and showing that the U.S. economy is not going along tickety-boo as they want us to believe. And on the strength of that terrible durable goods orders report, the market continued to go up. And once again, this is the topsy-turvy world that we're living in, where basically bad news is good news, because bad news means that the Fed will continue its quantitative easing. It will not taper. And therefore, they will continue to enjoy the fruits of that $85 billion a month being pumped into the economy. So every time there's bad news like this, the markets continue to go up. It's been a very bizarre trend. And unfortunately, we're going to continue to see this as long as the Federal Reserve, the central bank, the privately owned central bank of the United States continues to meddle in the U.S. economy. It continues to basically drive the markets over and above all of these actual underlying fundamental data that we see. In terms of capital goods orders specifically, we also saw a precipitous fall, including in especially non-defense capital goods, because they actually take capital goods and they divide them into defense and non-defense, because it's so obvious that the defense industry is basically an economy of its own. And unfortunately, in the wake of every such military intervention like what we're apparently going to see in Syria, the defense industry will get a boost as always, and orders will go up and they will make their money handsomely. But the actual productive business economy, of course, is suffering, and that's coming through in this data as well. So we've had some pretty disappointing numbers this week. It shouldn't be a surprise, I think, to people who have been looking at the long-term trends of the U.S. economy. But unfortunately, it is part of this new normal of bad news and bad news and bad news and markets rising. And the only thing that seems to have put a damper on that is the fact that the U.S. is heading towards war. So people are heading towards a risk trade in which they try to get out of the riskier equities and into safer havens like 10-year treasuries, or at least that's the theory.
Well, now, basically, are you saying that the interest rate on the 10-year treasuries was down? Basically, I know it was about 2.9%, I think, on Thursday. I know this was about 2.8 or something like that on Friday. Well, do we have any idea what the 10-year treasury interest rate did? Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly James is talking about how people seem to be investing in the 10-year treasury bonds now, because, of course, they're very, very uncertain about what's going on. And they're trying to get into something that is fairly stable and certain, and that's why they invest in the 10-year treasury bill. Basically, of course, in the last few weeks and last several months, well, the interest rate on the 10-year treasury has been going up and up because people didn't want to buy them, and they had to put a higher interest rate to try to get some people to buy them. Certainly, the Fed was buying probably 70-80% of all the 10-year treasury bonds, but to get anybody to buy them, they had to raise the interest rate. But apparently, did the interest rate drop today?
Yes, it did. Yes, it dropped 1%. It's now down at 2.79% and heading downwards. And that's significant, again, because back in early May, it reached its, late April, early May, it reached its nadir at 1.5%. So bonds were at their strongest point at that point, and they've been heading steadily upwards. The yield has been heading steadily upwards since then, reaching 2.89 the other day, and now heading back down towards 2.79. So again, this is indicative of that risk trade that we've been talking about, that basically people went in times of military intervention and the like want to head towards safe havens. And supposedly 10-year treasuries are one of those. And we also see this happening in the precious metals markets, with both gold and silver heading upwards in recent weeks. And that has been averted slightly, as basically the manipulation trade has attempted to keep gold from breaking through that $1,400 mark, or at least breaking substantially past it. But gold is still pushing upwards nonetheless, as is silver.
And I think basically everybody has to realize that this whole thing, in my estimation, is primarily manipulated. I mean, basically, they can manipulate things for a good period of time. They can manipulate them indefinitely, but we have people with fabulous amounts of money in our banks, in our six major banks, and then, of course, the Federal Reserve, all of which work in concert. And don't you think that they really manipulate our stock market and manipulate, certainly, the commodity market to at least some extent?
Oh, there's absolutely no question about that. In fact, it's done openly and on the record through something called the President's Working Group on Financial Matters, which was set up by the Reagan administration by executive order back in 1987 or 1988, in the wake of the 1987 crash, in order to ensure that never happens again. And basically, since then, we've had this President's Working Group on Financial Matters that specifically does go into the markets every day towards the end of the day, and if need be, they will pump the markets up in order to stop any precipitous slide that's taking place. And sometimes it's quite obvious. This can be seen quite clearly in terms of at a certain time, you'll start to see the stocks across the board, basically an entire index like the Dow or the S&P, climbing upwards in a steady fashion, not in the type of up and down stochastic fashion that we're used to seeing in stock markets, but in an absolutely straight line trending diagonally upwards. And this is clearly the result of direct manipulation of those markets. And it can sometimes be less obvious than that. And we see that happening in various ways. For example, with the takedown in gold earlier this year, there was a suggestion that that was accomplished by having some bullion banks that are basically in bed with the Federal Reserve, placing a bunch of short orders at the start of trading on a certain day, placing them all at the same time in order to plunge the price and to basically kick in the mechanisms by which the algorithms sell off their futures all at the same time if the gold price goes below a certain point. So there are different ways of manipulating, and some of them are more or less obvious. But the fact that manipulation is taking place both in commodities and in the stock market is undeniable.
And of course, if you know what the government's going to do, why, of course, you can make a great deal of money, which is, of course, why these people go into government. If you don't think that they certainly are cheating and certainly using advanced knowledge, why, you're sadly mistaken. Do you realize, of course, if you and I were to have knowledge what was going to happen to a stock, by the through some sort of insider information, why we would to act on that, we could go to prison, but not if you're a member of Congress. Up until very, very recently, members of Congress would pass legislation that would favor specific stocks, and they would go ahead and invest in those stocks, and they were specifically excluded from any certain punishment for using insider knowledge. How could you have something like that now? They're talking about changing those rules. I don't know what they have, but we're talking about it until the last few months. I mean, insider trading was used by our congressmen. That's why we have some of the finest congressmen money could buy. By Lyndon Johnson, when he went to Congress back in the 1950s, had to borrow money to get from Texas to Washington, D.C. So without ever holding an independent job, when he left Washington, D.C., and when he left the presidency, he was one of the richest men in Texas. This is the reality, ladies and gentlemen. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California if you have a question or comment. We're living in dangerous, exciting, frightening times. Give us a call if you have a question or comment for James. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and my understanding, James, that the government in Japan at the present time has decided that they're going to weaken the value of their currency so they can increase production and exports. And as a result, they're certainly turning out an awful lot of money. They're going to double the amount of money over there. But in the process, won't they eventually destroy the value of the money as well?
Well, exactly right. That's exactly what they're attempting to do. And this is part of a conscious attempt to get inflation going in a country that's been in a deflationary depression for the last couple of decades. And every previous attempt to do this has failed. So they've decided to do a shock and awe approach of doubling the monetary supply in the next couple of years. And initially, the markets were reacting to this in the way one would expect. The markets were basically heading upwards as all of this new money was being priced into people's calculations. But since then, it's actually quite hit an impasse, but basically stagnated. And from the highs that we were seeing early on in this program, upwards over 15,000 on the Nikkei 225 index, now it's down to around 13,600. So even the best attempts to try to inflate away the money in order to stimulate the stock market has basically already failed here in Japan. And we've seen GDP numbers disappointing for the last quarter. So any type of economic stimulus that they were hoping to accomplish by this seems to have already fizzled out. And the worst part is, as they continue to try to inflate away the money, that only really just shoots their own industry in the foot, because of course energy imports are a significant factor of business prices here in Japan, as Japan obviously doesn't have a lot of energy natively supplied, so it has to import a lot of liquid natural gas and oil and the like. And of course those imports become more expensive as the yen gets weaker. So even if you can lower the price of the currency, lower the value of the money in order to decrease the exports or increase exports by decreasing prices on the international market, you're also hurting those businesses at the same time by making them pay more for such things as imported energy. So it is, I think, a pretty much a failed policy already. And given the very, very fast turnaround in Japanese politics, I suppose I'd be surprised to see the current prime minister lasting more than a year or two in his current position.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I say this simply talking about the wonderful idea they had over there in Japan, but basically because the economy has been in the deflation for 20 years. So they thought that what they'd do to try to increase their imports would be to lower the value of their currency. They did that by beginning to print a lot more money. And basically, of course, that they're going to stimulate the economy by flooding the country with money. And basically, initially it worked. It worked great. And the economy went up. The stock market went up. Down around about 8,000, and suddenly it's up around 15,000, and then, of course, in reality, what was going on began to sink in. The stock market began dropping off to about 13,000. But as James points out, all these plans by men to regulate the economy get into trouble because, of course, Japan doesn't have any natural gas or oil, so it has to buy them. And, of course, now that the value of their currency is less, why, these products cost more. And that same thing is for commodities, for food, for other things they're having to import. And they are even having to actually import some of their food at the present time. And, of course, the price has gone up dramatically because they've lowered the value of their currency. And basically, between man's plan and time and God's plan and eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference. A free market works and works well. A controlled market works for a time, and then they begin to develop more and more consequences. And we're going to have a lot of consequences here, ladies and gentlemen, because the Federal Reserve System, the privately owned central bank, Federal Reserve is privately owned, owned by people who've made a great deal of money by manipulating our banking system, and they're moving us towards oblivion. I believe, of course, what's going to end up when this is all over is you're going to have a few very wealthy bankers, and a whole nation, 99% of the people, will be impoverished, as they are certainly in any place where you have a ruling elite, and here the bankers are the ruling elite. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-295. Our guest is James Corbett, who lives over in Japan, incidentally. And basically, James, would you like to tell our listeners how they can certainly subscribe to the International Forecaster and read your publications there? And then, of course, how they can actually get hold of your own personal newsletters and get to your website.
Absolutely. If people are interested in the International Forecaster, I'd suggest they go to theinternationalforecaster.com. That's all one word, theinternationalforecaster.com. And while you're there, you can find some of my latest articles. You can find previous articles by myself and others who write for the Forecaster. And you can also sign up for a free introductory copy if it's your first time subscribing to the newsletter. If you are ready to subscribe, of course, you can do that there at the website as well. And there's all the information about subscription there on the website. Otherwise, if you'd like more information, you can write in via snail mail at P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida 33883. That's P.O. Box 7752, Winter Haven, Florida 33883. And if people want more information about myself, I'm at CorbettReport.com. That's C-O-R-B-E-T-T report.com. I have thousands of hours of media freely available for download there, so I hope people will take advantage of that. And if they do find that media useful, of course, I am listener-supported media, so I do appreciate people buying my DVDs or subscribing for my own newsletter, which comes out once a week.
All right, fine. Well, basically, of course, this is such a vitally important time, ladies and gentlemen, because my concern is that basically down the line, the whole financial system is going to fall apart. Why? Because we have a paper currency with absolutely nothing behind it other than confidence in our government and our government leaders. And when people begin to lose that confidence, when the perception begins to change, heaven help us all. Everybody will be rushing for the exit, and I think an awful lot of people are going to... Well, it's like playing musical chairs. When the music stops, some people end up without any chairs. I think there's going to be an awful lot of people without a chair to sit on when this whole financial system begins to crumble. And I don't know when this is going to happen, but I think it's getting closer and closer as we certainly move into these irresponsible, certainly military activities. And, of course, if we should have a major military confrontation or perhaps an EMP, electromagnetic pulse attack on America, why, we could wipe out our financial system literally overnight. James, do people over in Japan or in other countries ever talk about the very real possibility of an EMP attack on America, or do they even know what that is?
Well, I don't think it's part of general common knowledge here in Japan or many of the places that I've been to. It's not something that I think is a pressing issue for a lot of people, but it should be. Exactly as you say, this is a very important vector of attack, not only, of course, for those dastardly North Koreans or whoever is likely to be blamed in the wake of such an attack, but of course it would also make an effective false flag attack for people who have ulterior motives about where to send the American people in the wake of the panic of such an attack. But whatever the case may be, I think people should familiarize themselves with what an electromagnetic pulse attack is and what they can do to actually prevent that from affecting their own electronics through the use of Faraday cages, and even old discarded microwaves can make good places to store electronics that can survive EMP attacks. I go through some of this on one of my recent podcast episodes, so if people go to CorbettReport.com, they can just type EMP into the search bar there and find my previous podcast about that, where I talk about it in some length and talk about the possibility of that being used as a false flag.
And if you want additional information, we have an excellent 4-CD set, an excellent DVD on this, on the threat of an EMP attack. We offer the 2004 Congressional Commission report, the 2008 Congressional Commission report, and simply just a collection of articles off the Internet. You can get it on your own. If you want to get it from us, we'd appreciate it. It'll help finance what we do. But you need to understand this is not an imaginary threat. It's a very real threat that instantaneously could change the nation we live in. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But I think that to some degree we're seeing dramatic changes in our economy. I think that certainly if you look and see what's happening to Walmart, Walmart sales are down. Target sales are down. I think a lot of our major certainly distributor sales are down. Do you get this impression, James?
Yes, I do. And in fact, the latest news is that JCPenney's stock is plunging, as one of the major investors has just announced that he's going to be dumping all of his JCPenney stock. So more carnage in the retail markets. And that's not good news for the average working American who has to either shop at these places or even get jobs at these places. And unfortunately, this is becoming more and more difficult as the economy continues to drag.
And even Sears, which is certainly one of my favorite companies, always has been, but they're having difficulty as well. So most of our major distributors and maybe even some of the big box stores are having real problems. Apparently Home Depot is doing pretty well, but certainly when Walmart's certainly having problems, we should all be concerned. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, I know you're not a financial advisor, James, but what should people be doing today? Should they be investing in stocks? Should they be investing in bonds? Should they be investing in property? Should they be investing in precious metals? What should people be doing to protect themselves? Because we don't know what's going to happen as a result of this war with Iraq. But believe me, the Russians are moving some of their warships into the Mediterranean. And suddenly, Iran suddenly is beginning to get set because they fear that Israel is going to attack them. And Iran has already said that if they are attacked by Israel as a result of what's going on over there, they will retaliate against America because they know that Israel would never attack them, certainly without certainly permission from Washington, D.C., no matter what anybody says. Iran says we would not believe what anybody said. Israel would not attack us without American permission, and we will retaliate. How would Iran retaliate against America? And I shudder when I contemplate the possibility of an EMP attack and the fact that most people don't even know what it is. Simply as a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think and believe. James, what should people be doing to protect themselves? And again, our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you have a question for our guest, go right ahead, James.
Well, unfortunately, you're right that I certainly believe that a World War III scenario would start in Iran, and Syria is just one step closer towards that. So that's something that I'm personally keeping my eye on and quite concerned about. But you're right, I'm not a financial analyst. I'm just an economic analyst, not a financial advisor. I'm just an economic analyst and geopolitical commentator. But one thing that I can say is that people should realize that in times of military intervention and military strikes and the like, people are looking for safe havens to store their money, safe anchors, and safe places of value. Generally, the asset classes that benefit from that are commodities and treasuries. And assuming that people don't want to buy into the Ponzi scheme that is the U.S. treasuries, I would say that tangible assets and commodities are the way to go. And within that, of course, I'd say the two main classes you'd want to be looking at are precious metals, which are already heading upwards from a market bottom earlier this year. And the other one is real estate, which I think is always something good to have, something tangible, some place. And it's even better if it's some place out in the countryside that you can go if and when things start to get really hairy in the urban centers. So that's something to be thinking about in terms of a long-term strategic investment that can actually do something for you in the future, rather than just meaningless pieces of paper in the stock market, which can evaporate overnight if and when they decide to pull the plug on this Ponzi scheme.
And I will tell you that I know people back in Washington, D.C., and other major cities who are getting property away from the major cities that they hope they'll be able to get to if things begin to fall apart. These people are well-to-do individuals, and they're very seriously concerned about political and financial instability in America. Most people really can't believe we could have political and financial instability here. What do you think? Could that really happen to America?
Not only could it, but it's actually already being war-gamed out by the Pentagon. In fact, Anthony Gucciardi, who runs a couple of websites, including naturalsociety.com, he recently had an article out pointing to a 2008 Pentagon document, which was basically talking about exactly this, the political instability that the Pentagon is envisioning coming in the coming decades, and the economic stability that will be attendant on that political instability, and how this plays into their strategic planning. So the Pentagon is actually making plans for a type of political civil unrest in America, and deploying various assets and getting things getting their ducks in a row for that type of eventuality. But funnily enough, if the average person is talking about this, they're portrayed as a crazy prepper type, and they should be sidelined as some sort of conspiracy theorist. But if the Pentagon talks about it, then it's perfectly okay. This is the type of double standard we constantly see, and we've pointed out here on the program week after week, is that we see all of these people in high positions talking about this possibility, and that's just taken as for granted. But when we talk about it, we're sidelined as conspiracy theorists.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. If you have a question or comment for James, because I think this is really very, very real. I really do believe that there are people in government who certainly are very, very concerned about unrest. I don't know if the average listener out there is aware that there's an increasing tempo of crime and violence and all sorts of nonsensical murders going on all the time. I mean, we're told a couple of young black men beat some New Zealand in our community to death because they were bored, and all sorts of things taking place that just are totally illogical. But there's increasing racial violence in America. Of course, we don't talk about it, but it seems to be this is a growing tendency on the part of certainly racial groups to be attacking other racial groups, and it's an unfortunate situation. But this is certainly the sort of things you begin to see when a society that is turned against God begins to break down. Well, my telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And basically, of course, as James has simply very clearly stated, most of the things that we see are manipulated. The markets are manipulated. The commodity prices are manipulated. The price of oil, the price certainly of gold and silver, all manipulated. But basically, of course, right now it's difficult to say what they're doing. Do you think the stock market and the long-term trend is down or up, James?
I wish I could provide an answer to that, but unfortunately, in the level of manipulation that we have, I have no way of knowing which way the market is heading overall. I know that in the long term, we're looking obviously at things declining from their ridiculously overinflated value now. And just, I mean, for just a sign of that, basically, you just have to look at the for example, the Dow Jones or the S&P over the lifetime of the quantitative easing, and what has happened is you've had this incredible run-up in both of those stock indexes. So what is the obvious answer to what will happen if and when that quantitative easing is removed? It will go down. So I think there's no doubt about that. It's only a question of timing and what happens between now and then. And little events, I shouldn't say little events, but events that come out of nowhere like this Syria military intervention are some of those monkey wrenches in the works that we just don't aren't really able to predict or to see where things are heading with any degree of accuracy. So those types of things mean that the little ups and downs that will happen along the way are pretty much unpredictable. So whether Dow Jones is going to test 15,000 again or whether the S&P is heading down in the short term is something that's beyond my scope of ability to predict. But I think that the thing that is certain is that ultimately in the long run, the markets are vastly, vastly overinflated. And we see that between the discrepancy, as I talked about earlier, about, for example, the durable goods orders and other such poor economic data versus the incredible ballooning stock markets. And eventually those two things are going to have to meet. And when they do, the bubble is going to start to pop. And we know prices will come down from then.
Okay, let's go to Tom calling us from Mendocino. Hi, Tom. Do you have a question or comment?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
James, I'm curious, as a man on the ground over there in Japan, with Fukushima, and we've been hearing it a lot more in the news, and it sounds like the situation there is continuing to degrade. What's your perspective on the current situation and what you see for the future of Japan? And I'll hang up and
take... Now you're talking about the nuclear problem, I assume. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, unfortunately, it's exactly right. It is getting worse, and that's not even an opinion. That's actually admitted by the Japanese government, which has just recently raised the serious radiation incident level on the International Nuclear Event Scale to 3. So they're actually raising the emergency level of this situation because of some recent leaks that have been confirmed to be taking place in the radioactive water that they're pumping in and through the molten reactors. So it is getting worse, unfortunately, and now the Japanese government is admitting that TEPCO is completely unable to handle this on their own, so they're going to have to step in, and they're asking for international help at this point. So things are getting quite serious, and it's starting to have an international effect.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess James Corbett. James, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. What's the message you'd like to leave with our listeners here in the United States and throughout the world?
Well, the first and most important message right now is that we are again on the brink of military intervention. So I really hope that people do their best to spread information and awareness about what's happening in Syria and to really try to put the brakes on this process to the extent possible. And it is a question of what the public can do after the record protests that we saw in the run-up to the Iraq war, having basically no effect whatsoever on the Bush administration. It's doubtful or questionable what can be done to put the brakes on this latest intervention. But regardless, I think we have to try because, again, lives do hang in the balance here. And I don't want to see the effects of this type of intervention, not only in the lives of the Syrian people who are obviously going to be directly affected, but also how this will play out in international terms with Russia and other countries potentially coming to Syria's aid and starting a wider conflict. The other part there, just as we were talking about just before the break there, talking about Fukushima, which again is becoming a problem. At the very least, I guess the good thing that we can say is at least the Japanese government is admitting that the situation at the plant is getting worse and radioactive water is leaking directly out into the ocean. I say that's a good thing because at the very least, they've reinstituted the fishing ban off of Fukushima's coast, which had been lifted, and they were selling Fukushima fish in the Tokyo fish markets for the last year or so. But they have now reinstated that ban, so the fishing off the Fukushima is going to stop again, which is, at the very least, that's a good thing, because, again, this radioactive fish making its way into the food supply is, I think, the main concern right now in Japan, and increasingly so on the west coast of North America, where I think we have to start looking at the possibility of the radiation reaching those fish as well. So, unfortunately, a lot of bad news this week. I wish we had some happy news to bring the listeners, and who knows, maybe next week we'll bring that. But in the meantime, I hope people stay safe and work towards what they can in terms of preventing this Syrian military intervention.
God bless. Thanks very much. We'll talk to you. Oh, we won't talk to you next week because it's Labor Day. We'll talk to you the week after that.
All right. Talk to you then.